Good morning, I'm Tommy Howe, and welcome to another edition of Tree Huggers International on KBZT FM 94.9, a weekly natural science and environmental affairs program for the listeners of FM 94.9 and San Diego and all of Southern California, from the beaches to the mountains to the deserts. This is Tree Huggers International. Be careful and use this show with caution, because you might just learn something. With the Obama administration coming into power earlier this year, a host of sweeping changes have already come to pass, most of them good news for conservationists and the environment as a whole. Whereas the previous administration scaled back much of the previous 35 years' worth of federal environmental regulations within months of coming into office, the opposite has occurred under President Obama, with his restoration of the EPA's traditional watchdog and regulatory role, restoration of endangered species protections, the scrapping of shale oil plans in the Rockies and the Mountain West, and his directive to have the EPA review California's request for a waiver for the state's new clean car law. Also, for the first time in 30 years, a president of the United States is making energy a key component of his domestic agenda. President Obama has several times stated his commitment to developing alternative energy sources, reducing oil consumption, and curbing carbon emissions which contribute to climate change. However, while running for office last summer, at a time when oil was far past $4 a gallon, Obama stated his willingness to consider a renewal of offshore oil drilling, made possible when President Bush lifted an executive moratorium on oil and gas leasing offshore. Congress followed suit in September by allowing the 27-year-old ban to expire. So joining us today to talk about the concerns of renewed offshore oil drilling and other related conservation matters is the legal manager from Surfrider Foundation's national office in San Clemente, Angela Howe. Angela, welcome to Tree Huggers International.
Hi, Tommy. It's great to be here.
Full disclosure, despite our similar sounding last names, Howe and Howe, we are not related, although you spell your name far more sensibly than I do. And I want to talk about some concerns regarding offshore drilling. But first, let's talk about Surfrider's national office, because I think sometimes we here in Southern California think Surfrider is just a couple of local chapters in San Diego and Orange County. And it's actually much, much larger than that.
Right. We're actually over 55,000 members worldwide and over 80 chapters. So as a grassroots organization, our members is where we draw our strength from. And our staff is actually quite small, and we're headquartered in Southern California in San Clemente. And we only have about 30, 35 people on staff. We also have regional staff. Our newest regional staff is actually a Hawaii Islands field coordinator. And we also have a few in Pacific Northwest, Florida, East Coast. So a lot of our work is geared towards what can you do on your local level, and then sometimes pushes upwards to these national issues.
And you're not just located in the United States. I mean, Surfrider has some chapters in other countries too, correct?
Right. We have affiliates throughout the world, Australia, Japan, Surfrider Europe, Brazil.
Now, where do they surf in Europe? Do they surf in Ireland?
I think there's a contest in France.
Do you surf?
I do surf. I love San Onofre. So that is now my backyard, and get there whenever I possibly can.
You're not from Southern California originally.
I'm from Texas, actually.
You wound up going to law school out here or in California, correct?
Right. So that's kind of when I took up surfing. I guess I just associated it with California from the get-go. So moved to California. I was like, okay, well, now I have to go surfing. Buy a surfboard, and here we go. And I love it. I love being outside. I've always been very active and love to recreate. Surfing was just a natural, and you get to absorb the natural beauty that the California coastline has to offer, too.
Now, you went to law school at UC Berkeley, correct?
Right.
So did you go surfing Half Moon Bay, Santa Cruz?
You know, I went up there a couple times, but it was a little cold for a Texas gal. And I have really good friends who are in Southern California, so I'd basically come down very frequently and surf in the L.A. area is kind of where I started, Sunset.
When did you first go to San Onofre?
Actually, when I was volunteering with the Surfrider Foundation chapter of West LA Malibu, and that was actually where we started in 1984, right in Malibu, a group of very concerned citizens, surfers, started up a chapter. They said, you know what, we really care about this break. We care about preserving the ecosystem and the natural beauty of the break. So we're going to start Surfrider Foundation. And that has grown into this 55,000 member organization. And they had a weekend trip down to San Onofre, and I came down, and I actually met a couple people from Surfrider headquarters at that point. And we had a barbecue and just stayed out all day, and it's just perfect waves, you know, great day there.
when you were considering going to law school, even before you'd really taken up surfing, were you already thinking about pursuing something involving environmental law?
Yes, I was. Actually, in high school, I participated in the Envirothon, which was basically learn all you can about nature and, you know, do a little tests on it. And it's kind of nerdy. It was like the academic decathlon, except for environmentally minded students.
Oh. Okay, so as a kid in Texas, were you going to Big Bend or Guadalupe Mountains or those
places?
Yeah,
well, we had the San Antonio River, I mean, the Rio Grande, and then Corpus Christi was the big coastline. And then my dad actually lives in Maryland, so I went to Ocean Beach, Maryland.
Oh, really?
Yeah, Ocean City there.
Yeah, lots of high rises there.
Yeah, there's a lot going on there, but it was great. It was a good family trip, and I learned to love the ocean early on. He taught me how to body surf, so.
Texas Hill Country, Guadalupe River, ever do any tubing down there?
Oh, yeah, tubing. That's like the best. And a lot of soccer playing in the Hill Country.
That's great.
Yeah.
So you became involved with Surf Rider, and how did you wind up getting your position? Was there, did you start off as a volunteer, or how
did
that happen?
Yeah, I actually did. So I worked for a larger law firm in LA, and they actually encouraged, you know, getting involved with your community. So my friend, my surfing buddy, had told me about Surf Rider, and I was like, that's perfect. I definitely want to volunteer for Surf Rider. And I actually started off not doing legal work for Surf Rider, but on a volunteer basis, I helped with the education program. And I went into schools and taught kids about the watershed and runoff and what you can do to help your environment. And that was really rewarding. And I knew even before going into law school that I wanted to do something good for the environment, for people who want to help the environment.
So as litigation manager, do you have some say as to which fights the foundation is going to pursue?
Right. And a lot of that is strategy. Where are we going to engage, and where do we have the capacity, the funds, the human capital? You know, where are our activists strongest and have that desire to engage on the issues? Judging by all of those, and then obviously researching the legal issues that go into whether or not we're going to be able to win this case, you know, what are the politics surrounding the case? There's a lot of strategy involved. And right now we have about 12 ongoing cases in the U.S., and we also have a lot of national policy initiatives like the oil drilling, and then some legislation that we're actually ramping up on the statewide level in California, and there are a few pieces of ocean legislation on the national level that we're monitoring as well.
You know, before we get into the details of those, I wanted to ask, does Surf Rider outsource any of the legal necessities to freelance attorneys, or is most of that nuts and bolts long work done in-house, like researching precedents, that kind of thing?
Oh, well, we do as much as possible in-house, but the real strength of our legal department is yes, the outsourcing. I mean, we just had a huge legal victory in Florida, and we worked with a stellar team, Collins and Wes, who knew the ins and outs. They had grown up in Florida. They knew the ins and outs of the destructive dredge and fill projects and what they had done to the Florida coastline and why they needed to be stopped. And they were in tune with the political atmosphere. Yeah, basically using these smaller environmental law boutiques up and down the coast, and then other environmental law firms like NRDC, Earth Justice, and then we have actually a network of pro bono attorneys that have just volunteered to do pro bono projects. Cooley Godward is actually very helpful here in San Diego. McDermott, Will & Emery, Hogan & Hartson, a lot of the larger firms donate their pro bono time to Surf Rider as well. So Surf Rider is very fortunate in having all of these different legal resources.
And then you mentioned this case that just came to pass in Palm Beach, Florida. There was a beach dredging project. Is that correct?
Right. It was a dredge and fill project. So they were basically going to dump over 7 acres of hard bottom, near shore hard bottom, which destroys habitat and ecosystem. Just dump sand there, costing millions of dollars and destroying the ecosystem without going through the proper permitting regimen. They weren't analyzing all of the environmental harms that could take place in that instance.
Is that normal in Florida? Was that unusual? And is that what got Surf Rider's attention?
Or? Well, this was actually called Reach 8. There were seven reaches that they've already dredged and filled. So they've already dumped sand on 7 different lots. This 8th one, basically our activists had looked at Reach 7 and said, you know what, this sand is a different color. It's killed the viability of the marine life in this area. It's killed our recreational opportunities. We can't even scuba dive there anymore. It's muddied the water so bad. We don't want this to happen to Reach 8, what's happened on Reach 7. So that's when our chapter got active and basically filed a lawsuit in front of an administrative law judge. he in turn ruled for us, which was really nice. That came out on March 3rd through our Palm Beach County chapter. He basically said, you know, you're right. We haven't analyzed all the environmental harm or the turbidity or how this is going to affect ocean resources or recreational opportunities.
Was the city or the county behind this dredging?
Oh, yes, exactly. So the city was, the town of Palm Beach was applying for the permit to do the dredge and fill. And that's why we had to go before the administrative law judge, because we actually sued to stop that permit. And the administrative law judge said, you're right, this permit should not be granted. Now it's in the hands of the Florida Department of Environmental Protection.
So is there a way for Surfrider to lobby that entity to take into consideration the environmental concerns?
Right. No, that's exactly right. So what we're doing is this case was a stepping stone to expose all of the harm that this process has done in the past and what it can do without the proper analysis to go into these beach dredge and fill projects. So we're going to use it as a stepping stone to now talk with the Department of Environmental Protection and even talk with people using these same methods throughout the nation to change beach management practices and change the regulations. And that's where you go from the litigation side to the legislation side. Personally, it was very gratifying because it was one of the first cases that I worked on as the litigation manager when I came into Surfrider. So to have that case go through, we got it approved by a board of directors, you know, we facilitated the chapter. We have a wonderful regional manager out there, Erica DeVonzo, and her and I worked together on the case to get it going. And that was over about 2 years ago. The hearing actually went on for more than a month in September and October of 2008.
There's some legislation currently in circulation regarding marine debris or ocean litter that
right,
Surfrider is
right.
involved in.
Yeah, and this is huge. Our chapters, especially in California, have been centered around this issue. Why I say especially in California is because the Ocean Protection Council actually came out with a marine debris report, a report on ocean litter. That's a California agency, and they basically spelled out, you know, with the help of research from Algalina Marine Research Foundation, this is what's happening to our ocean. There's a huge gyre in the North Pacific made of trash, plastic that comes from our beaches. This is what's on our beaches, this litter. And they, you know, basically there were 1.3 million cigarette butts picked up in one day last year. So cigarette butts, plastic bags, polystyrene, that's what came out of this report. Those are the major harms that's ending up in our ocean and killing our marine life. And that's what we're looking to be regulated on the statewide level. So this year we actually have a suite of marine debris legislation that's going through the California State Legislature and that Surfrider is actively supporting. Our major one is SB4. That's what we're putting a lot of our support behind. It's actually geared at regulating cigarette butts that end up on our beaches. Our San Diego chapter actually coined the Hold On To Your Butt campaign to try to address that very problem. By and large, the most littered item, and it causes harms not only with visual blight that obviously ties into ocean recreation and tourism dollars that our beaches bring in, but also it's toxic. It's toxic to the marine life and to the environment. This is what birds eat. This is what fish eat. I've actually heard of a baby putting a cigarette butt in their mouth. You know, when you go to the beach, this is what is on the beaches. So this SB4, which was introduced by Oropeza, would actually ban cigarette butts on beaches and in state parks. And a lot of cities have already done this, banned smoking on their beaches, but this would make it statewide.
A Surfrider volunteer recently had some ashtrays installed at South Carlsbad State Beach, correct?
Right, yeah, that's another component of the Hold On To Your Butts campaign. It's basically, we also have these little containers that you can affix to your belt if you are a smoker. And then if you're done, you know, you just put the cigarette butts in there if you're not by a trash can. Attacking the problem from every angle in legislation is a really good way to do that. It's also tied in with our Rise Above Plastics program, which I think you've spoken about before.
Mm-hmm. We had Elizabeth on talking about
that. Yeah, she's done amazing things, and that's caught on not only nationwide, but worldwide. I mean, now everyone knows about the Pacific Gyre and what our consumerism basically has led to the destruction in our ocean. The Rise Above Plastics ties in with the marine debris, ties in with the ocean litter, and that's all what's going to be addressed this year in the California State Legislature.
Now, this is related to Encinitas, for example, banning plastic bags.
Yes, plastic bag, yeah. That was wonderful. And there, AB 68 is the 25-cent fee for all plastic bags statewide, and that's what the legislature is looking at this year. And we supported a bill similar to that last year. We're hoping it does go through this year. That just something to let shoppers know, hey, bring your reusable bag. If you do that, you will be knocking out the second most littered item on the beach.
It's really a shame because my wife and I, we go to the beach. We like going to the beach as much as anyone else does. And you walk along the beach, and I feel like I should have one of these little scooper items that I used to have when I was working in Washington State Parks. When you're walking along, just picking something up.
Yeah.
Because the volume of trash you find sometimes, it's disheartening.
It really is. It's really amazing. But at the same time, it's heartening to see what our chapter members have mobilized around and what they're able to do and how they're able to educate the community on addressing this. You know, bring a reusable mug to the coffee shop, bring a reusable water bottle and a reusable bag to the grocery store. And that's what you can do to change your own life individually. And then we advocate for legislation on the statewide and national level to change these things that government can really step in and do. And for instance, the polystyrene ban is actually it's asking for restaurants to only use takeout containers that are made of recyclable materials. So not polystyrene and not, you know, plastics that are not recyclable.
And when you say polystyrene, you mean like styrofoam?
Styrofoam, sorry. Yeah.
Okay. Because that doesn't decompose particularly well. It just crumbles into smaller and smaller pieces
and ends up in the gyre or in birds or fish stomach and then maybe on our sushi plates.
Ah. If you're just joining us, this is Tree Huggers International on FM 94.9. I'm Tommy Howe, and joining us today is the legal manager for the Surfrider Foundation's national office in San Clemente, Angela Howe. And we're talking about the reach of Surfrider nationwide and worldwide, and also some of the recent cases and concerns about offshore drilling and also the North Pacific Gyre here in California and elsewhere. For more information about Surfrider, go to the main website for the foundation at www.surfrider.org. And two of the biggest Surfrider chapters are right here in Southern California, the San Diego and South Orange County chapters. San Diego Surfrider is at surfridersd.org, and the South Orange County chapter can be found at surfrider.org/South Orange County. And we'll go over those again at the end of the program. We'll also get those on the website, too. And, of course, both those chapters and the national office played a major role in the Trestles campaign to keep the proposed Foothill South Toll Road out of San Onofre State Park. Where are we right now with the toll road? Because I know the Commerce Department opted to uphold the California Coastal Commission, but are we really going to see a challenge again to the integrity of the San Onofre backcountry?
Yes, well, you always have to be wary. So we had a major victory with the Secretary of Commerce denying the TCA's appeal of the Coastal Commission's decision. So basically, right now, in a legal context, the TCA, if they wanted to go forward with this project, they would have to challenge the Secretary of Commerce decision in an Administrative Procedure Act in federal district court. And that would be an incredibly high burden to overcome. They have to prove that the ruling would be arbitrary and capricious. They have a huge legal hurdle there, and we also have two other ongoing cases, one in state court over the CEQA issue and then one in federal district court on the biological opinion. Both of those cases have been stayed. The TCA is now looking into options, other alternatives for the road. Bottom line, we have to look at other means of relieving traffic in this area. We have to widen the 5, invest in mass transportation. Basically, the road should not go there, and I think we've done an excellent job proving that, and the turnout that we got at the hearings and the support not only from Southern California but nationwide and worldwide was amazing. Everyone values this surf break, this park, and they really showed up to tell the Secretary of Commerce and the Coastal Commission exactly that.
You know, there was a really good piece in the LA Times we were just talking about a few minutes ago that Bobby Shriver and Joel Reynolds wrote from the NRDC about how it was a bad idea to begin with. It remains a bad idea.
Right.
And if you bring it up again in 2 years,
it'll still be a bad idea.
It's still a bad idea.
Yeah.
And the positive thing, I guess, out of all of this is that the Secretary of Commerce, the federal government, basically upheld the California Coastal Commission, denying that permit to the TCA.
Mm-hmm.
And the TCA, I'm glad to hear they're looking at some other options, because obviously alleviating traffic is in everyone's best interest.
Yeah.
But certainly putting it in a place where it's basically the path of least resistance was such a terrible precedent.
Oh, yeah.
Parks,
I mean, through a state park. And I would go back to Texas and tell, you know, my Texas friends, yeah, well, we're working on stopping a toll road through a state park. And you know, they're just like, what? Because who would put, that's what a state park is for. It's to reserve open space. It's to not put roads through.
Exactly. You set that aside whenever it was because you said, we're choosing not to put something through here. It's not meant as a placeholder. We're serious about this. Mm-hmm. It's a park. It's for everyone. Why undo the things you love about the place you live in the first place? It doesn't make a whole lot of sense.
Exactly, and jeopardize a world-class surf break at the same time. I mean, that's the only spot in the continental U.S. that they have the World Championship Tour for surfing.
The Obama administration hasn't ruled out pursuing offshore oil drilling as part of their energy plan for the nation. But California has learned the hard way about oil spills, certainly in Santa Barbara in 1969. Can you talk about the action alert Surfrider has put out and some of the thoughts behind that?
Basically, what happened in the waning days of the Bush administration was there was a five-year plan proposed for 2010 to 2015 on oil leasing. And basically, they're opening up to oil leasing all of California shoreline and the entire eastern seaboard. That's all up for grabs. And what Surfrider is focused on now is saying no oil drilling off our coasts, because we've seen the death and destruction that comes from oil drilling, oil spills, and the mere process of extracting and refining oil. So one of the main reasons that Surfrider is attacking this issue is just how harmful it can be for our oceans. So as an ocean conservation organization, we know that it's not only the oil spills. Like, there was one in Europe, or one in Australia. I mean, it ended up on the beaches.
It was a calamity.
So no more oil on our beaches. And we've set up a blog, and it's, you can find the action alert on that blog. It's nottheanswer.org. So basically, that's the issue. How are we going to solve our energy needs, our fuel needs? Not oil. Oil is not the answer. We don't want to go to this carbon-emitting fossil fuel that's a finite energy source, rather than investing in conservation and alternative ocean energy. When you say, okay, this plot of land is okay, or this plot of the ocean is okay to drill for, you're supplanting the opportunity to use that for other possible ocean energy projects, wind, wave, or conservation. What about recreation and fisheries? There are so many competing uses for the ocean. You really need to sit down and look and analyze a comprehensive plan for ocean management. And as we've done in the past with the moratoria that were recently lifted, as you stated, we want no more drilling. We basically want the moratoria back in place.
And I think it's good to go up to the Central Coast and use the example up there. If you're driving north of Ventura, you start seeing all those oil derricks off the coast. Mm-hmm. Those were grandfathered. Those were there before that moratorium was put in place.
Right, right. And that's what we're asking for now, is no more new drilling. You know, we have in place enough infrastructure to get the oil needs that we've already planned for. Now it's time for the country to stop and look in a different direction and use renewable resources.
Schwarzenegger said that he wasn't going to have any oil drilling in California as long as he was governor. But I think California's waters only go 3 miles out.
3 miles out, right.
So beyond the 3 miles, is that the area that was being talked about for where this potential offshore drilling
right,
would
offshore
occur?
Right, offshore drilling on the Outer Continental Shelf, OCS. So that's past that 3 mile mark.
And that would extend out to how many miles?
I believe it's 200 miles. And that's why it's under the jurisdiction of the Secretary of Interior and the Minerals Management Service.
Are there some areas of the country that are more likely to see some offshore oil drilling? I know Florida was really against it, and then they recently said, you know what, we'll think about some limited offshore oil drilling.
Yeah, the ones we think are really jeopardized are California, believe it or not, Florida, Georgia, North Carolina, and Virginia.
Basically, this is because this is where the oil is. No one's really looking for oil off the coast of Maine. I think the fishermen would probably have a problem with that as well. do you see a legal fight looming in the future over this?
I actually was at the California Environmental Law Conference back in October, and the Costco Buscan, the one up in San Francisco, that crash led to...
Yeah.
Stricter regulations on shipping and, higher stakes for when you do crash and the liability for moving oil. So it's not only the drilling, it's the whole process surrounding it and how we need to not invest our resources and our infrastructure towards that and move to a different segment of the economy and basically give the ocean resources and ocean conservation its due weight. You know, it's a valuable, valuable thing. And it brings in money through fisheries, through tourism, through recreation. So we need to value that more than just drill, baby, drill.
itsnottheanswer.org is the website.
Exactly.
That's www.itsnottheanswer.org.
Right, and we have a one pager and maps, and it can tell you everything you want to know about where you can go voice your concerns about ocean conservation, and then also just what the MMS plan is and what it's analyzing. It was a big change going from corporate law firm to small nonprofit. So, you know, stuffing membership envelopes, you know, we'd have a stuffing party at lunch. And, you know, you don't have a secretary and a paralegal under you. It's a do it all yourself, get the paper cuts and try to fix the copy machine yourself and all of that. But it's great. It's so wonderful to work with a team that's not only, you know, fun, funny, and great people, but they're also just as dedicated as I am to the mission. And to work with the amazing volunteers, including the San Diego chapter, who's just done amazing, amazing work, is just, it's more than I could ask for. So I really love that.
And, you know, you mentioned you had done corporate law before you came to Surfrider. How long did you do that?
It was 2 years at the larger law firm. And that was actually a huge D.C.-based law firm that had a satellite office in L.A. So I was in L.A. I actually spent a summer in D.C. and then worked for 2 years in L.A. And we still had, I think, 60 attorneys in our office. So.
Wow. So you went from 60 attorneys to working with the much, much smaller contingents of folks
at
Surfrider.
And Surfrider actually has two full-time staff attorneys. And the other attorney, Michelle Kramer, my boss, is now the COO. You go from working with all attorneys to working with one other attorney and 30, you know, marketing, environmental scientists, chapter coordinators, really cool people from all different walks of life. And I really enjoy that.
And as much as you enjoy your work, do you find that the hours are longer?
No.
Is that right?
Well, so the law firm, I mean, there's billable hours. And in a billable hour, I think in Surfrider time, even though, you know, I'll work weekends, I'll do the beach cleanups, you know, it's what I find is a...
It's not work.
It's a blurred line between work and home and family and coworkers. And so I think that's the most probably dramatic change. I definitely work hard. I mean, you know, you'll go make presentations up in Long Beach one night, you know, come to San Diego the next day. But I love it. So I guess it just doesn't feel like work all the time. Thank you for highlighting the NotTheAnswer.org website. And also, if you want to learn anything more about Surfrider's legal campaigns and initiatives, it's surfrider.org/legal.
Surfrider.org/legal.
Yes.
Okay, terrific. And if someone wanted to volunteer with some of the legal work there,
right?
Are you looking for volunteers? Do you have to have passed the bar or anything? Or
right, yeah, we have a legal issues team. And that's our database of pro bono attorneys. And that's who we use for smaller projects or sometimes even larger projects if we can get them in. There's a link on the website for how to get involved and how to do more.
Surfrider.org/legal. And then the website regarding the action alert about offshore oil drilling, mm-hmm. not just in California, but around the United States, www.itsnottheanswer.org. Angela Howe, legal director for Surfrider. Wonderful to have you on the program, and it's just great speaking to someone who is doing environmental law. It's just great to see folks using their legal minds and legal skills for something that a lot of us feel so strongly about.
Well, thanks, Tom. It's great to be here, and we love your show, too. I mean, it's great to see airtime used to bring these really important issues to the forefront. So thank you.
Well, thank you, and similar last names, it all flows together. So, Angela, very, very nice having you on the show, and we will talk to you next time.
Okay, great. Thanks, Tommy.
Well, that's going to wrap things up for this week's edition of Tree Huggers International on KBZT FM 94.9. Many thanks again to Angela Howe, the legal manager for the Surfrider Foundation's National Office in San Clemente. Plenty of additional information is at the website Angela was just talking about, www.nottheanswer.org. That's nottheanswer.org. San Diego Surfrider can be found at www.surfridersd.org, and the South Orange County chapter is at www.surfrider.org/South Orange County. The opinions and views expressed on Tree Huggers International do not necessarily reflect the opinions and views of the staff and management of FM 94.9 or Lincoln Financial Media, and as producer, I am solely responsible for this program's content. Questions, complaints, concerns, compliments. Would love to hear from you. Go ahead and email me at tommy@fm949sd.com. For more information on Tree Huggers International and to hear previous editions of the show, go to the Tree Huggers International page at the FM949 website. Just go to FM949SD.com, go to the Tommy page, and click on the Tree Huggers International logo. This is Tommy Howe for Tree Huggers International on KBZT FM949. We'll be back again next Sunday morning at 5:30 with another take on natural science and environmental affairs in our corner of Southern California. But in the meantime, get ready for another edition of Nina Blackwood's New Wave Nation next on FM949. Have a great Sunday and a good week. Be well.